Weston.com.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhardt. And you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. We're so glad you're with us this morning. We hope you'll stay with us for the entire hour and that you just keep your dial set to WMNF. As I understand it, Radioactivity is going to have Bernie's campaign manager on this morning. He's going to be in St. Pete this coming week, so that'll be an exciting time. And what a week this has been.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Revolution in the air. I'm telling you, there's no doubt about it. We are taking stands, and I'm not going to say the last man standing wins because I'm very, very wary, frankly, of all the chicanery that happens behind the scenes, and I'm really still really focusing on making sure that we get the voter fraud, which has nothing to do about voters. It has everything to do with the process, the electronics, et cetera. And I'm really convinced, and Barbara Simons, you're going to hear her in a few minutes. I was able to talk to her yesterday. She has been a pioneer in this field. And this is a computer, PhD computer scientist from UCal Berkeley. And actually, the biggest critics to any kind of machine voting period have been computer scientists. And that should tell us a lot. And they said, if it's a machine, it can be hacked. It doesn't matter if they're on the internet or not. That is not a problem. And so you'll really want to stay tuned to hear what she has to say. And then if you got our announcement, I'm really excited about talking to Jamie Kipman, but we're postponing that till next week. I think that you will be as horrified as I was because I'm very concerned about the lead in schools, whether it's here in Hillsborough or in Tallahassee. And I happen to agree with an awful lot of pediatricians in the state, including the Florida branch of the Pediatric Society, that they want zero level of lead because that's the only safe level, particularly for children, particularly for very small infants and children. But I'm going to postpone that to next week and get ready to have your socks knocked off because the history between lead and gasoline to flame retardants, who would have thunk? Who would have thunk, right? Well, put bromine in the middle of it, and you got some really interesting thing. But that will be next week. I was so shocked because, you know, I was Tuesday paying attention, I'm sure like a lot of you were, to the elections, et cetera, what was going down and other things. And I really somehow missed the deal between Schumer and McConnell to just fast-track 15 federal judges. And I thought, oh, my God, if I'm not concerned enough about Kavanaugh, what is this about? So I called on and last night, and Jessica Mason Pickle has agreed to be on the show. And so we're going to be talking about that. What's that about?
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Arlene. Important topics and support for WMNF comes from our members and WEDU PBS. WEDU will honor nonprofit organizations and volunteers during the WEDU Be More Awards. Applications and nominations will be accepted beginning August 30th. Information is online at wedu.org/bemore.
Well, as I said, I'm looking at the time, and I want to get right into this. I want you to hear Barbara Simons, what she has to say, because we have a bona fide one of the best experts in the field. And then I want to get to Jessica a little later. So without further ado, Barbara Simons.
Well, I am so happy to welcome to the show Barbara Simons, and she is a computer scientist extraordinaire. In fact, one of the real women pioneers in the field. She was one of the first, actually, from UCal Berkeley to get a PhD. And if we have time, we might actually go into the history of that, because I think it has relationships to an awful lot of women in their status. But luckily for us, she was a former president of the Association for Computer Machinery, which got her involved in the act very early of voting machines, and she's the only woman to have received a Distinguished Engineering Alumni Award from UCal Berkeley, and she is an expert on electronic voting. She wrote Broken Ballots and Will Your Vote Count, and she also wrote the report in 2004 that dissuaded the Defense Department from Internet Voting Project, and she co-authored a July 2015 report on U.S. Voting Foundation. So, with great pleasure, Dr. Barbara Simons, welcome so much to the show.
Well,
Well, thank you. It's very nice to be with you. By the way, I just should add that that book and the 2004 report were co-authored. I didn't write them by myself.
Oh, yeah, but you were quite important.
I was a co-author. Yeah,
yeah,
I was.
Okay. Well, we just had our primary elections here in Florida.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, some pretty astounding results, at least for governor. And so, Barbara Simons, you know, here you are a computer expert, and you were one of the first who rang the alarm bells, even though didn't President Clinton in 1999 ask you to investigate, you know, internet or computer voting because of problems? And then is that how it started, that you became aware of the problems?
Well, that's sort of how it started. President Clinton actually asked, I think it was the National Academy of Sciences, to do a study of internet voting. I think, like many people at the time, including me, he thought it would be a good idea. So he asked for the study to be made, and I was on the study panel. And after being on that panel and talking to people and really thinking about the issue, it became clear to me and to the rest of us that internet voting was a bad idea, that it was too insecure and we shouldn't do that.
Oh, well, and, you know, I had Sarah Granger on last week, and we were talking about some of this, and some listeners called in that they were at DEF CON, and she was talking how this 11-year-old girl hacked in just a very short time. But then, you know, I had callers call in and said, well, that wasn't the same, and, you know, that wasn't the same. And so I think it's really important, because at DEF CON, both last year and then the year before with Village Vote, when they actually had replicas of three of the four voting machines that are still being used, and they hacked in pretty fast.
A lot of systems were broken into in DEF CON. The 11-year-old girl was in the children's village, I think they called it. I'm not sure what the name was. And they actually were given a system to hack into, which everybody knew was vulnerable, and they were also taught ways of hacking. So it was a very instructive experience for them. I think the press blew it a little bit out of proportion, because it didn't really mean that the Florida database, I think, which is the one that she claimed to have hacked into, is vulnerable. That doesn't prove it, what happened there.
Well,
because it was a special setup. They put insecure software into the system to begin with, so it was kind of special.
Well, yeah, but what's happening in terms of cybersecurity, if you will, and not only with our voting machines, but really, and wasn't it in 2008, actually, that when President Obama was running to be president, the Chinese hacked in to get some idea of some of his materials, what kind of a president he might be if he were elected president? I mean, it's not like this kind of hacking hasn't been going on for a long time.
Oh, systems have been hacked for quite a long time, and major ones, major government institutions, large corporations. We know that computers are vulnerable to being attacked, and the problem is that now, basically, all of our ballots are being counted by computers. In Florida, you still use some of these really old systems that are touchscreen systems, where the machine you vote on actually counts your ballot, which is not a good model. They really should be replaced with voter marked paper ballots. But even those voter marked paper ballots are themselves counted by computers, because they're counted by scanners, and scanners really are computers. So instead of talking about voting machines, we should probably be talking about voting computers, because that's what we now have throughout the country.
Yeah, I've had so many people say, but I marked the paper ballot. And I said, well, yes, but then didn't you put it into a machine to be counted? And they said, yes. And this is part of the problem, because any place a machine is there, as you would really know, there are so many ways that it can be hacked into and changed.
Well, that's a concern, and it's very, one of the problems is that it's very hard to protect against all forms of attack, because you have to get everything right and not make a single mistake, whereas the attacker just has to find one single vulnerability. And, you know, we humans tend not to be perfect, software tends not to be perfect, the people who set things up tend not to be perfect. And so there are many ways, and then, of course, you always have to worry about an insider attacking the system. So there are many, many ways that systems can be vulnerable. The good news is we know how to protect against that. We know how to make our voting machines our voting systems resilient against attack. We know what needs to be done. And if you ask me, I'll tell you.
Oh, well, I will tell you, but you need to talk to the Senate, because I'm following what's happening with our the Voting Security Act, and apparently they aren't too keen on paper trail and mandatory by hand auditing. And so, could you briefly talk about what's happening right now or not happening in the Senate?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Secure Elections Act, which we have very high hopes for, seems to be stalled and possibly reduced in value. It hasn't yet passed, of course. What we were hoping for was for the government, the federal government, to provide enough money to the states that they could replace all of their insecure voting technology with secure voting technology and with the processes that are needed to protect that security. I mean, as I said, you can't, anytime you have a computer involved, you can't be 100% sure that it's not going to be attacked. But there are steps you can take to recover from attacks if you do get attacked, and that's the key, that's the point.
And so many people will say, yes, but our voting machines, you know, our voting apparatus is not on the Internet. And somehow they think that that's a protection.
You are absolutely right. People do say that, and it represents a misunderstanding. Even if they're not on the Internet, the problem is that all of our voting systems, either these touchscreen machines that are used in a lot of Florida or the scanners that are used in the other parts of Florida to count your paper ballots, they all have to be told about each new election. So they have to be told who the candidates are and where their positions are on the ballots so that they can count them properly and, you know, credit the right candidates with the right votes. That telling of the machines is basically done by another computer. It's done by a PC, typically, which often is connected to the Internet. So what happens is you program the PC with the information about each new election. For a particular election, just program it, like for the midterms, you know, program them for the candidates for the various parties and so on. And then you take that information and you move it to the voting system. Either, typically, you'll do it by a memory card or something like that. So you physically move it. You might be connected by a net, which is probably less good. But in any case, you move it physically from the computer, from the computer that programs the systems to the systems themselves. Now, if that computer is connected to the Internet, typically it can be infected. And when it gets infected, it can pass that infection on to the voting machine. And this is a real threat. There's been a demonstration done by Alex Haldeman, who's a professor at the University of Michigan and also a verified voting technology fellow, where he shows how he can remotely hack into a paperless touchscreen machine of the kind that are being used in Florida for the upcoming midterms, unless a court case changes that, and have been used in Florida since 2002. He can hack into them without their being connected to the Internet. And he does that by hacking into the computer that programs them. So we know this can be done, and he showed how to do it. And not only that, we have historical evidence that it can be done. I don't know if your listeners recall, this was some years ago, when the Iranian centrifuges went haywire and self-destructed. Those centrifuges were not connected to the Internet, but they were infected by something called the Stuxnet virus. They got infected because they were, again, being programmed, just like these voting machines are, by computers. And these computers were connected to the Internet at some point, and they got infected with Stuxnet, and then they passed that infection on to the centrifuges, and then the centrifuge is self-destructed. So that's an historical example of how it can be done. And as I say, Alex Haldeman has an example, which was actually the New York Times made a 5-minute video of that, which people can see at our website, which is verifiedvoting.org. There's a link there. You can click and see the video where he shows how he can remotely hack into these machines. And these machines are going to be used, and they have been used since 2002 in Georgia and other places, and they're going to be used in this highly contested 2018 midterm in Georgia, unless they get thrown out by the courts, which would be great. But, you know, it's going to be a tough road.
Well, and it is a tough road, and you just mentioned Stuxnet. And I mean, you know, cybersecurity is an enlarged issue. I mean, kind of with Stuxnet, and then that worm escaped and infected, you know, millions of computers all over the world, and it didn't take people too long to figure out just where it was coming from. And it kind of became open season, didn't it? You know? I mean,
that's always a concern, yeah.
Yeah, and back to the 2016 election, at least there were reports that the Russians hacked into the voting rolls in Illinois, and they attempted to get into like five of our counties here in this state. And if an adverse person or a nation gets into our voting rolls, there's any number of things they could do to actually disqualify that voter when they go to vote. And isn't this a concern?
Oh, it's a great concern. The voter registration databases are also vulnerable, and if somebody can hack into them, that person, you can, of course, take someone's name off the rolls, or you can simply change their address so that when they go to vote, they're told you're in the wrong place, or you're not registered properly, or something like that. So there are many, many ways of disenfranchising voters by hacking into those voter registration databases. So it's really critical that election officials make these databases as secure as possible and take various steps to try to protect them. In all of these cases, we have to be prepared for attack and have backup so that if we are attacked, we can rectify the situation. So, for example, with the registration, the databases, there should be frequent backups made of the databases and retained so that if it's discovered that they were hacked into, you can go back and hopefully find a pristine copy. It gets complicated, but, you know, that's the sort of thing that should be done. With the voting machines, the way we protect ourselves in the event of being hacked is by conducting manual, and it really should be manual, post-election ballot audits. We need the paper ballots. The voter needs to check the paper ballots to make sure that they're correct, which typically isn't done with these touchscreen machines that produce voter-verified paper audit trails, but we know from studies that voters often don't check them, and they should, so I hope anyone who's listening to this who's voting on this machine, be sure to check those pieces of paper that are on the side of the machine typically and make sure that they record your vote properly. But they're really not a good system anymore. They're antiquated. But in any case, we need voter-marked paper ballots where the voter has literally looked at the paper ballot and checked it, unless the voter has a disability, in which case the voter has to be able to verify them some other way if the voter can't see them. But the voter has to verify the ballots. They have to be properly stored and secured so that nobody can mess with the ballots. So that's called chain of custody, and that has to be done. You have to have a really strong chain of custody. And then it's not enough to have these paper ballots if you never look at them. So you need to use these paper ballots as a check on the computers that count them. And we know how to do that. We know how to do it the most efficient way with the least amount of effort. It's called a risk-limiting audit. And done properly, a risk-limiting audit will catch any problems if they've occurred. So if the system has been hacked, so long as the voter-marked paper ballot is correct, and that means the voter has to look at the paper ballot, as long as that's correct, then those paper ballots are the valid of record, and they can be manually recounted if necessary. And so then even if the computer was hacked, it won't be able to change the outcome.
And again, we're talking to Barbara Simons. And, you know, Barbara, you just presented something that is such common sense. In other words, we know computers are vulnerable. You would know far more than any of us in so many different ways. And as you just said, you know, that you have to try and prevent every kind of an attack where a person attacking only has to look for one vulnerability. And so what you said was so eminently logical. Paper ballot done by hand and randomly or audited by hand, so then you can check the count with what actually the people voted. But here, you know, again, you were one of the ones that President Clinton called in to study feasibility. You're a computer expert, you know, to change voting. And then when we had the infamous Florida hanging chads down here, you know, that poor tired old people just couldn't do it and all this kind of nonsense. And then, as I understand it, you realized that Silicon Valley was really gearing up for voting machines. And then 2002, the modernization of our Voting Act, and then it's been really ongoing since then. And now, and you know, when you and some of your colleagues were trying to bring attention, hey, computers can be hacked, they are not safe, this is important to our democracy, and why, when we realize, I don't know if it's been totally proven that the Russians actually hacked in, but there's certainly a lot of evidence that they hacked a lot of places, and they certainly could. And so it would seem, with something as important as elections, that, you know, paper and counted by hand makes such sense. So why? Are you coming up against politics? Are you coming up against institutionalized divisions? The state tells the locals areas to get the votes, and they say, don't tell me what to do, or I'll do it my way, etc. I mean, what are you running up against? And also, you're running up against what? ES&S and all the money in these machines? So give me an idea what all the obstacles are to such common sense.
Oh, well, that's a big question. First, I just want to be—I may have misstated something. What I mean is the voter mark paper ballots. So, a voter with a disability may not be able to mark them by hand. So, people who can mark them by hand, I think that's a good idea. But we also need to provide a voting system for voters with disabilities so that they can have voter marked paper ballots, but that doesn't mean they do them by hand. And also, when I said they need to be able to verify them by looking at them, obviously a voter with vision issues can't do that, so we need to provide another method for them to be able to verify their ballots so that everybody gets treated equally. But when you're asking what we've come up against, I think there are a number of things. Perhaps the biggest one at this point is money, because it costs money to replace these systems, even though voter mark paper ballot systems, especially if the bulk of the voters are marking the ballots by hand, and then we have a machine that can be used by voters with disabilities, that kind of system is less expensive than many of the systems that were purchased initially back in the early 2000s. But there was money provided then, and there isn't enough money being provided now. And that's what this bill that you referred to earlier was about. The Secure Elections Act would have provided the money, but it so far hasn't passed, and it has been, as you pointed out, modified in some less than desirable ways. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. But that's what we need, is we need money. We need to focus on common sense. It's really common sense security issues, common sense paper ballots, common sense check them afterwards, and check them manually because, again, you can't trust computers. And so it's fine to use computers to double-check them if you want, but the main check has to be on the actual ballots, the ballots of record, which are the ballots that are voter-marked ballots, paper ballots that the voters can verify. So if we do that, and if we do this checking in a reasonable way, and we finish the checking before the results are certified so that if the initial results were wrong, we can correct them, then it doesn't matter who does what to the vote, to the computers that count our votes, because we have a backup. We have these paper ballots, and they are the valid record. So we truly, truly can make ourselves, we can protect ourselves against this kind of attack on the machines. Now, you also mentioned that Russians have broken into voter registration database rolls and places like that, and that's true. So both, I think Arizona and I forget the other state were.
That's right.
They were broken into, and those we know for sure. We also know that the Russians had probed a total of 21 states, at least. I mean, we know that. I mean, sometimes these things get found out much later than you initially hear them. You know, we've seen that with hacking situations too, where hacks were announced were discovered months after they happened. So this is the minimum of what happened, but there could have been more. And one of the reasons for probing systems of any kind is to try to find their weaknesses so that you can exploit them later. So even if these systems themselves were not impacted in any way in 2016, that doesn't mean that they couldn't be impacted later, and that's a worry. So again, we need to really harden our voter registration databases. What voters can do, they can take the initiative also, and I hope they will, by checking before the elections to make sure that their registrations are correct. I mean, that they are registered, their names haven't been deleted, and that they are correct. And they should do this enough in advance so that if there is a problem, it can be correct, it can be fixed. So that's one thing that voters in Florida can and should do. And then they should do it again shortly before the election, just so they don't get a surprise by going to the polls and discovering that they're not properly, that their name isn't on the voting rolls for some reason. So they should do it early on so they can fix it, and then they should do it again shortly before the election just to make sure that nothing happened. And, of course, they should be sure to bring voter ID with them to the polls, because I understand you need that in Florida. So these are steps that voters can and should all take. Another option that's available for voters if they're concerned about the voting machines where they live, if they vote on these touchscreen machines, they could, for example, request absentee ballots. So that's something else that I know is an option in Florida. So then they would vote, they would get the paper ballot at home, and they would mark it at home and mail it in. So there are a number of things that the voters themselves can do. They shouldn't feel. I hope people won't hear this program and say, "Oh my God, I shouldn't vote because it's all rigged." No. There are things they can do to make sure that their ballot is actually counted and counted correctly, and they should urge their election officials to move to voter-marked paper ballots with statistically sound post-election ballot audits that are called risk-limiting audits. And if they do that, then they'll have the gold standard. So that's really what needs to be done.
Yeah, we, if nothing else, we can't have doubt if our vote counts, your ballot, and as you wrote in your book. And if outsiders are successful in just giving us doubts, then that is really serious. And to me, that I think they're very, very vulnerable to chicanery. I'm not so sure we haven't seen a lot of it with some of the people elected, but I don't even want to doubt that. And so I'm so thrilled that you've given us this time today. I know how busy you are, and I strongly suggest that people go to Verify Voting, which you're a head of the board of Verify Voting. There's all kinds of information there, and much more detail than we've been able to discuss, and also all the wonderful things you recommended. And so we've done this pretty fast. Is there anything particularly you wanted to get out that we didn't mention?
Well, I certainly want to urge everyone to vote. And as I said, one complaint that we sometimes get is if we point out the problems, then people will feel discouraged and not vote. And that's, of course, we point out the problems because we want them to be fixed. The best way to convince people that there's no problem is to have a system that people know is secure and know will count their votes correctly. But I also just wanted to say that the best way to be disenfranchised is not to vote. So if you don't vote, you are disenfranchising yourself. So I want to encourage everybody to go to the polls in the fall. It's critical midterm. And again, check to make sure that you are properly registered before you go, or you can request a paper ballot from home, but go to the polls, vote, and check to see what kind of machines are being used where you are. That information is on the Verify Voting website, something called the Verifier. If you go to that and you click at Florida, you'll see the various counties and you'll see what kinds of machines are being used. And if you don't understand some of the terminology, which isn't really clear places, the DREs are these direct recording electronic machines, which are these touchscreen machines. And VVPAT, are these voter verified paper audit trails. And again, they're really not very good because most voters don't verify them. So what we need are voter marked paper ballots throughout the state and mandatory post-election ballot audits that check that the machines that count the votes are correct and have not been hacked.
And again, we've been talking to Dr. Barbara Simons, and she is a computer scientist extraordinaire. She also co-wrote, actually, Broken Ballots, Will Your Vote Count? And so, Dr. Simons, thank you so much for giving us this time today and all the work you have been doing and continue to do. You are a very important pioneering warrior. So thanks again.
I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You do take care. Bye. And again, Barbara Simons, and her book is eminently available. So, and you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. And let's do a little station biz right now, and then we'll get on with Jessica Mason Piclo.
This is Stuart Mellish with a WMNF community announcement. WMNF is seeking applicants to join our board of directors, the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation. We are looking for representation as diverse as our WMNF community, including people who are actively volunteering and candidates who are under 30 years old. To find information and download the application, visit WMNF.org and select the board tab in the About section. Or contact Ms. Julie at 813-238-8001 or by email at missjulie@wmnf.org. The deadline to return completed applications is midnight on Sunday, September 17th.
Thank you, Stuart, and you can catch him this afternoon. He plays some great music. And you are, again, listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Dr. Simons has a lot of information, didn't you think, Arlene?
Yes, indeed. She's really a fascinating woman. I've posted a couple of articles that deal with her. One's a podcast that I think people will enjoy if this is a topic they want to know more about.
Don't let all the, you know, abbreviations snow you. Just keep your eye on the prize. Paper ballot that you can check by hand. That's what the game is about. Okay, I'm going to put on this little bit of music, and so I'm going to get a hold of Jessica, and I want to know what the 15 railroaded judges are all about. Despair, absolutely, and nobody should also live in ignorance. And I am so happy because with us on the phone right now is a person who certainly does not live in ignorance, and she's going to enlighten us. I've gotten the phone with right now Jessica Mason Piccolo, and she's the Vice President of Law and Public Policy for Rewire, that great site that gives you so much information, not only about reproductive choices, etc., but just covers the whole gamut of really what's happening in our world, because women's rights are human rights and vice versa. And so, Jessica, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back, Mary. It's always such a pleasure to be here.
Well, I got to admit, come Tuesday, I was focusing on elections and stuff like that. And in Florida, we had a real barn burner.
Yeah, you guys have a great race happening down there.
We really do. I'm telling you, it's really exciting. And I'll tell you, it's energized. And you've got some real, some real ideologies are into play here. And so I'm pretty excited. We're going to watch this one and get out there. But anyway, I kind of missed the deal between Schumer and McConnell about the 15 fast-track judges. And I got to admit, when I found out about it, my jaw just dropped because I called you last night and said, Jessica, what is this about, you know? And indeed, what is it about? Because here, you know, there McConnell has been just railroading these judges through. I don't remember. I think that I noticed that under President Obama, it took like 165 days for every nomination to work its way through, and now with Mitch McConnell, it's like 14 days.
Yeah.
And I mean, 15 federal judges, we cannot afford this. And so why? What the heck happened?
Well, I think a couple things are happening here. We're seeing a failure of leadership from Senator Chuck Schumer with regard to judicial nominations and the Democrats' ability to at least slow the process down and force McConnell to do something about it. And really, that's capped off by this last deal that you just mentioned. So let's unpack that deal a little bit, because it's bad, but it's also, there are some points where I think we can and put pins in them. So as you said, Schumer agreed to a deal with McConnell that got 15, that's effectively fast-tracking 15 judges to the federal courts. And some of them got confirmed right away. I think they right away agreed to seven, and the other seven or eight are happening. Many of these judges are actually not controversial picks and were holdovers from Obama nominations. Not all of them were. So in the mix, we got some judges that are not controversial that should have been confirmed eons ago, but weren't. But that said, we got some bad ones in the mix, too. In particular, Trump has successfully appointed another federal judge who has got a unanimously unqualified rating from the American Bar Association. Republicans want to call the American Bar Association some sort of liberal advocacy group, but the reality is that the largest national trade organization, for lack of a better descriptor, for lawyers in the country. And so this is how lawyers sort of judge their own peers. And their own peers have decided that Charles Goodwin, who is now a federal judge in Oklahoma, was not fit to serve. But here he is. So I think it's a microcosm of what we're seeing in terms of the Republican takeover of the federal courts, and this is going to be one that lasts a lifetime, if not several.
Well, and with, you know, Kavanaugh, you know, right around the corner, and the knockdown drag-out fight now about whether, you know, the Democrats can get all the papers, and I think the National Archives has said that they can't possibly get it ready until the end of October. And as I understand, the Bush administration said, well, they're going to try and facilitate any way they can to get the papers out. I mean, with this just impending right after Labor Day, it would seem to me that And you know, we've got midterm elections coming up very shortly, where there is a possibility that the Senate could change hands. I'm not so sure it will, but there is that possibility. Why wouldn't because the Democrats, they don't all have to be there, don't they, to have some kind of an opinion about it, just one senator. And so even if the others want to get back to, understandably, you know, to be involved, why do they capitulate so?
If I could answer the why to why is Schumer and the rest of the Democrats capitulating on all things for the Republicans right now, I would probably be saying something else. I don't know. It makes no sense. You're absolutely right. Democrats don't have the votes to full out block these nominations, but they do have tools. They do have procedural tools that are available to them to make Republicans work for them, the same way the Republicans made Democrats work for their nominations when President Obama was in office. And you mentioned the idea of Democrats leaving. They could force what's called a roll call vote on Republicans for everything, and that would require them to have 51 votes to pass these and to confirm these nominations. And McConnell has had some attendance problems in his caucus. Folks aren't showing up, so they've needed Democrats to vote with them, and some Democrats have been happily going along, and that should stop. That really should stop. I mean, the Democrats are a opposition party, and they need to start governing and behaving as though they are the opposition.
Well, and, you know, they should look at Florida, you know. I mean, no one would have expected our outcome. But, you know, Gillum, you know, because, you know, Democrats are always trying to attract the swing votes, and so they're always very moderate. No, don't mention single payer. Don't mention impeachment. Don't mention this and that. And Gillum says, heck no. You know, this is what I stand for, and this is what I'm going to run on. And, you know, that there, I'm thinking, you know, of McConnell stopping, you know, President Obama's a nominee and gets Neil Gorsuch. And I'm looking at Brett Kavanaugh, and you and I have talked about him before, and the man's policies across the board really alarm me. And so when the Democrats should be saying, heck no, and find out ways, get a spine, I mean, McConnell is the master at manipulating. I frankly don't understand this kind of wishy-washy.
Yeah, I don't either. Former Senate, Majority Leader here at the time, Harry Reid's staffers have even come out and been very critical of Senator Schumer on this point because, again, you know, we are making it easy for Republicans. Democrats are making it easy for Republicans. I'm saying we, but Democrats are making it easy for Republicans, and we shouldn't. They should be doing the opposite. They need to be making sure that Republicans earn every vote that they are successful in, and right now that's just not happening. And whether it's because there is a view in the caucus that, like you said, running on progressive values and embracing progressive values and being a progressive party is something to run away from when all of the evidence to the contrary I'm not sure, or if they are buying into some narrative that, you know, bipartisanship is something that this country needs right now. And sure, it does. But bipartisanship does not and should not mean Democrats falling over backwards to accommodate Republicans and their extremely conservative agenda, which, quite frankly, harms their base, like left, right, and center. I mean, this is what's so mind-boggling about it is, you know, it's not just Schumer and Democrats capitulating on judges. It's also just failing to stand firm, for the most part, against Republican agendas that hurts the Democratic base. And it has really been the voters who have led the Democratic Party and not the other way around. I'm thinking, you know, you gave the example in Florida, and then I also look back to the fight over the Affordable Care Act when it was mostly the work of the disability rights community that really got Democrats to do their dang job.
Well, you know, I'm thinking back, you know, to the hanging chads, because the prior guest, I've been fighting hard to try to get, you know, people attention to, I think, which has been election fraud for several years. And mm-hmm. to me, you know, kind of it really all started, you might say, here in Florida with those hanging chads. And then, you know, the election going up to the Supreme Court, you know, and Gore loses and is such a gentleman about it, says, oh, well, you know, we're not going to put this out. And you know, I and the voting machines, et cetera. And, I look at the Democrats and, you know, with Kavanaugh, Brett Kavanaugh, you and I have talked about it more than once, about this guy, really, both in his political and in his judicial posture, one way or another, he has been involved in some of the major events, in many ways very harmful to the American people, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, for years. And if ever there should be on the line a mandate to look at this, because he pretty much represents to me the radicalization, if you will, of our politics, and particularly with the Republican Party. And, you know, that to me, if ever, like here in Florida, Gillum had the guts to stand up and say, no, this is what we need and this is what I think. And look what happened. And for the Democrats, just to look, you can't just look at Neil Gorsuch, well, look at him too. But Matt Kavanaugh, when you look at this guy, you see the efforts to impeach Clinton. You see literally part of the hanging chads when he was part of that got it up to the Supreme Court. And so we get Bush. And then we get the torture. And I mean, and then he's, you know, on the judgeships. I mean, if ever there's a time to me that there is a reckoning, it has to do with Brett Kavanaugh.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the reasons why the document fight in the Kavanaugh nomination is so important is because of all of these things that you mentioned, Mary. He has been in public life and in the public sector for decades and as more or less a Republican operative.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to that extent, that, you know, that's a record, and those are actions that deserve interrogation. And quite frankly, there's evidence that he may have even misled the Senate Judiciary Committee the first time around when he was nominated as a judge on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals with regard to his work in the Bush administration on enhanced interrogation, torture, indefinite detention of detainees, all of those things. And so, you know, Kavanaugh is a Trump nominee, but he is also representative at very much of the Republican campaign to remake the federal judiciary into a conservative, ideological, and politically powerful branch of government that is more or less beholden to conservative and, quite frankly, conservative Christian interests and corporate interests. So it is the lack of leadership in opposition by the Democrats most recently with the deal on the judges and then not having a very strong and unified opposition to the Kavanaugh nomination and its process is real troubling because these, you know, the federal courts will be interpreting law that and making decisions that will last and have impact for decades. You know, we think about some of the biggest battles that we're fighting, and I'm not just talking abortion rights. I'm talking, you know, affirmative action, for example. That's likely to come before the Supreme Court again, and we have the Department of Justice saying that it is standing against these policies that have been in place to deal with historical, systemic, racialized discrimination, and the full force of the federal government is saying that that is no longer a priority of it to prevent that kind of discrimination. And so these are real, real serious conversations.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine because, you know, when you've lived all your whole lifetime under certain, so to speak, you thought were rules or laws, and they were established, so to speak, established law or whatever you lawyers use to term, you know, that when you hear Roberts, like when he was talking about the Affordable Care Act, and
and even challenging, if you will, the Commerce Clause. And, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg really jumped on him with that. But again, I'm thinking back to Nader, because this area was, was considered one of the ones that put Nader over the top here in Florida and gave so much problems to Gore. And I remember Nader always saying, well, with the Democrats and Republicans, it's Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And I thought, as a woman, I don't think that way. I thought, you know, the Supreme Court judges are extremely important, not only to women, but as a woman, you were very aware that the Republicans always have paid great attention to Supreme Court justices, etc. And really, frankly, what has been with the Democrats? That have they not given the kind of priority to that? I mean, how can they possibly not know that there's not a person in this country that in some aspect isn't in the minority, and that we need judges to be fair and responsible and can't be, you know, extreme ideologues? And to me, that has always been, I don't think there's ever been a judge that or a nominee that I haven't looked at in terms of how would this person stand on Supreme Court justices and other justices, because I think legal is that important to us.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up an excellent point, and I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, for Democrats, failure to focus on the federal courts has been sort of a feature and not a bug with the party. And I mean, this goes back to the Obama administration, too. And, you know, he was extremely slow in putting forward nominations, and the left and Democrats, quite frankly, didn't press him hard enough on that. And so, honestly, Republicans and conservatives have just played a better long game with the federal courts than Democrats and progressives have.
Yeah, and we've gone into some of the reasons for that. But, you know, sometimes when I look at the Democrats, and, you know, when I was listening to Schumer saying some of the things he was saying about this fast track for these judges, I thought, you know, at times I really think that some of the Democrats, particularly, you know, in Washington, are in kind of a different reality sphere. And I'm not sure there is a real reality sphere anymore, but the Republicans are surely in one. The Democrats seem to be in a la-la land. And I think a lot of us are seeing, we're not seeing anything the way either of them are seeing it. And it kind of worries me because, you know, things have, in my opinion, have fundamentally changed in this country so obviously, and it hasn't happened overnight, but they are not going to go back to any way what we have perceived it to be. And honestly, I think if people don't become aware that we are in a new ball game, and this is really an intense fight, and we're literally fighting for the very tenets of our freedom and our democracy, I think we're going to continue to lose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a conversation that I think is helpful also to pin on some specific data points for people, too, because, you know, talking about the federal courts and all of these nominations like that, that's real nebulous. But, you know, give your listeners a couple examples that they can just keep in their pocket as they're talking to their relatives and friends and neighbors. 60 judges have already been confirmed by the Trump administration so far. So that is a pace, I mean, that quite frankly has been unmatched. Right now, we have 1 in 7 appellate court judges as a Trump appointee. And so when I talk about this as a political takeover, I mean that very sincerely. We are almost at the point where 1/4 of the judges on the federal courts of appeals have been appointed by Trump and confirmed with the majority, with some Democrats voting with it.
And real quickly, because I know how generous you've been, I just called you last night and you really made time for this. What do you think is happening with McGahn? You know, because I saw him as totally the link to the Heritage Foundation and the Federalists, the judges. I saw that as his prime job, to feed these judges into Trump and McConnell. So what do you think is happening there?
Well, I mean, you know, it's who knows what's happening with anything with the Trump's inner circle, quite frankly. But I think, you know, McGahn, as you said, was hired with one real key job, and that was to stack the federal court, and he succeeded. So his leaving isn't a surprise. I think what is interesting and is always worthy of some extra attention is the manner in which it's executed. Apparently, McGahn learned about the fact that he would officially be leaving this fall from the president's Twitter account, and so. You know, those are the times that we live in. But, you know, if Trump is willing and looking forward to, you know, shuttling McGahn sooner rather than later. That, you know, I mean, that raises a whole bunch of questions related to the Russia investigation. But I also think it is, on a more benign level, an acknowledgement that McGahn has done his job. His job was to get, was to capture the federal courts. And so far, within the first 2 years of Trump's term, that has largely happened.
Very troubling words, but Jessica Mason Piccolo, that's what I really love about your analysis. You give it straightforward and such a, you know, such a base of knowledge, and also Rewire, again, I cannot recommend it strongly enough, the information that is on that website, and so Rewire. And so, Jessica, anything you particularly want to mention that we didn't get to?
Well, I mean, there is the possibility of, you know, really slowing down and gumming up the works on the Kavanaugh nomination. So I would just really encourage your listeners to call their senators and say that it is important that we have a full understanding of his record. And so let the National Archives do its job the way that it has with every other Supreme Court nominee since Watergate, you know. So that is really important. We are talking about a lifetime appointment in Brett Kavanaugh of a very young man. He will be on the bench should he be confirmed for 30 or 40 years. Mm. This is not a small appointment. So, you know, it's just constituent voices matter, and I would just encourage people to make theirs heard.
And Jessica, just with that, we deserve to have those records for not only the senators, but for us to look at some of that. I'd love to have somebody ask some intelligent questions to Kavanaugh about his role in the torture papers. I mean, I really would like to know what kind of legal, moral basis that a person like Kavanaugh used in that. I think it's important for us to know that.
Absolutely. And that is the constitutional duty of the Senate, and Chuck Grassley as Senate Majority Leader for the Republicans is organizing a constitutional coup. He's having the Senate abdicate its duty, and this is a very serious thing.
Okay, well, Jessica Mason Piccolo, I want to thank you so much because you got that last-minute desperate call, and I do thank you. As usual, your expertise is outstanding. So, again, get back to your work. It's very important, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mary. Always a pleasure.
You take care. Bye-bye. And go, oops, a secondary.
And I did post a piece by Jody Jacobson relating to this latest discussion, as well as some information about and by Barbara Simons. So take a look at our Facebook page from a woman's point of view, WMNF. You can always get fascinating articles there. We post a number of things during the week, always related to the topics that we frequently discuss on the show. So take a look. Well, and also, please be sure to like us on Facebook.
Well, we deserve some explanations. Why? Why would you fast-track that? Federal judgeships, that's a lifetime. You know, this is really, really important. And to me, it's just appalling that you can just get up and say, well, we've decided this, you know. And done, yeah. I guess we, you know, this is a year of elections. You would think they'd at least give tokenism to the fact that they give some explanation for their actions. This is insulting, I think. I really do. So, okay, Arlene, do you have any announcements?
I just want to remind you that even though it's a little ways away, be sure you vote in the November election and be sure you stay involved between now and then. Do what you can to stand up for what you believe in and to support the candidates that you feel will do the best job for our country, our state, and our community.
And if you need a little relief from all of this, yeah, I know football and all that stuff is starting, but you've got some terrific tennis matches coming up. We're going to see Venus and Serena, and I think both Sloan and Madison Keys are still in also the mix. Terrific matches, and I think Venus and Serena go at it Friday night. And if you like basketball, the women's professional playoffs are right now, and I'm telling you, Phoenix and Seattle are really having a Donnybrook, Diana Taurasi and Breonna Stewart. It is really worth the watch. So if you need relaxation from some of this, you know, there's some good things you can put your eye on.
And the Venus Serena match will be tomorrow. I'm guessing that it will be at 7 p.m., but last I looked, the time hadn't been announced yet.
Well, I'm going to go out with this new music by Amy Ray, her album Holler. We're going to hear the title cut. And if you haven't listened to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio, just keep it tuned here, people, all day. You need to know some of this stuff.